Tim Gibbons, let's begin with you. Big business news. If this ever does come to pass, it could be the right spark for downtown Jacksonville. The big question, though, on many's minds is, will this ever happen?
That exactly is the question. Is that ever going to happen? And if it does, who's going to pay for it? The mayor has said that private investment will take the lead. The issue there is, if private investment wanted to do this, it probably already would have been done. So how you get people on board to do that is a very open-ended question.
Cliff Davis, the renderings on the homepage at jacksonville.com look great. If they can make it happen, I think it would draw a crowd.
Oh, sure. It's impressive. But, you know, as we all know, plans are only that. They're only plans. So, you know, we'll see how it comes along, but you know, I've been around here for a little while now, and you've seen ideas like this come and go. But if it can get, you know, put into fruition, then, you know, I think it'd be a great thing for downtown.
And Jeff Billman, City Hall's Downtown Investment Fund has about $4 million in it. So obviously the bulk of this would have to come from private investors.
It sounds that way. But I do think that the city, you know, right now there has to be an emphasis on bringing more people downtown on a regular basis. And urban infill is going to be the thing that defines Jacksonville, I think, in the next 10 years and will, to a large degree, define our success. So, I mean, I think you have to make this project a priority to some degree or another, especially to get people downtown and to bring more residential into the urban core.
And we'll go to your calls on this in just a moment. Let us know your thoughts about the big announcement this week to completely redo the Jacksonville Landing. Give us a call at 549-2937. Tim Gibbons, people have been hearing about ambitious plans for the landing for over 20 years. There's a lot of cynicism, a lot of discussion I've noticed on both your website and the TU's website about this sounds great. People want it to happen. They've lost faith, though, I think, some people anyway.
You can't be cynical, no. There is that problem. The idea that the landing has been kind of a perennial, something has to be done with it. The landing is supposed to be the focal point of downtown. And so I remember years ago covering a around-the-world cruise that stopped in Jacksonville, and the people went to the landing. And kind of the bafflement of people who live here saying, you're coming from another country and you're going to the landing? That
seems baffling.
Right. But now they take people like that and bus them to the St. Johnstown Center because that's become the kind of the center of commercial life in Jacksonville. Something like that downtown seems like a pipe dream, but is what the area needs.
But let me ask you, the Rouse Corporation developed it way back in the 80s. They also did a similar development in Baltimore. If you go to Baltimore, their inner harbor is thriving. They have figured out, they've cracked the code for how to make an inner core harbor development or waterfront development work.
They have people.
They've got people there.
They have foot traffic. Foot traffic brings commerce and it sort of perpetuates this effect. The thing with the urban core in Jacksonville is not that many people live there. So you have trouble constantly getting people into these. You can build the nicest thing in the world and, you know, people aren't going to drive in from 45 minutes away to go to it. You have to
retail,
have
retail follows residential.
Yeah.
And that's there's a hope that the 220 Riverside project, which is outside the urban core itself,
but close by,
you get a bunch of people living there, that will have a spillover effect.
Cliff Davis.
Yeah. You know, my mother and father used to tell me stories when I was a boy about Main Street when we would drive down there, and they would say, you know, used to when we were growing up, this was the place to go. You know, this is where all the shops were, and this was the, you know, the focal point of the city. And even though Jacksonville spread out a little bit since then, it was still spread out even at that point, and people still came downtown. And, you know, I think that's going to be your point is to draw people, you know, to downtown and give them something that they want to come to downtown to be a part of.
Let's go to your calls. Meanwhile, the lines are jammed as we discuss the big news out of the Jacksonville Landing this week. If you had a chance to check out that artist rendering, what is your reaction to the ambitious plans to redo the landing in downtown Jacksonville? 549-2937. Harold's been holding. Good morning, Harold. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you. It finally appears that the Jacksonville Landing has become somewhat of an attraction in the city. I think to tear it down would be a gross mistake. You have to imagine that once you wipe that out, now the traffic that you had coming into downtown for the sake of the landing, they got to find somewhere else to go to try and entertain themselves. I would suggest that if it was possible, if they can do an extension to the landing, going to the east, or just reconstruct something to the east if possible, or to the west of the landing, before they consider tearing that down.
All right, and that's Harold in Jacksonville. Thanks for the call, Harold. Is it a mistake? Tim?
There is an interesting thing that came up when these plans were unveiled the other night of, I don't think anybody expected a suggestion that the thing totally be raised and a new thing put in its place. The idea had been to basically cut a hole in the middle of it and
open it up to Laura Street.
Reconfigure it, which would leave it there, leave it at least semi-functioning during the construction. On the other hand, it's an outdated building. It obviously hasn't, it's been around here for a long time and has never really worked. So the idea of saying, okay, that didn't work, let's roll the dice on something else, seems to be gaining some traction.
Jeff Billman.
I haven't lived here long enough to venture an opinion on whether the
keep you're the new to the area.
But I will say this, in the month or so that I've lived here, people have given me, you know, millions of suggestions on what to do, where to go, places, whatever. Not one person has said, you need to go to the landing. Not one person. Mm. So I'll just, you know.
That's interesting, and thanks for that, and lots of calls on this topic. Let's go to Gail in Arlington. Hey, Gail, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't care how fancy you make that building. Without a good public transportation system, I'm not going because I won't drink and drive. My family is we're very strict. You know, we don't even have a glass of wine and get in the car.
Mm.
And as long as there's no real public transportation for me to get down there, I'm not going to go. I agree we need something. I'd love to be able to go down there after Symphony or something like that. But as long as there's no public transportation, I'm not going anyplace.
Thanks.
I'm not going.
Thanks for the call, Gail.
Well, as you said, Jeff, earlier, the idea of, you know, they have people. When you look at these places that are successful, and public transportation is one of the ways to get those people there, it's really hard. You know, they're building a new parking garage right across from the landing now, but Jacksonville doesn't suffer from a lack of parking. It suffers from a lack of people to use those parking spots.
You sort of have a chicken and the egg thing here. You can't really have a solid public transportation system with so much sprawl. You can't, because it has to go so far in so many different directions. Public transportation, the best public transportation networks are concentrated around a core, and you have to have people there to have that core.
Right. Lots of tweets on this topic. Daniel, open it up to Laura Street. That's great, but I wish the plans were more architecturally distinctive. It's a focal point. Go bold. From Mike on Twitter, suburban malls in downtown never work. If you want people and business in downtown, build housing. And a call about that, it's Dick in Pontevedra. Hi, Dick. Good morning to you.
Good morning. They just don't get it. What they really are trying to do, and pull it over on everyone, is to build more high-rises on the river. Big hotel, high-rise residence, going to be very expensive. Block the river off. I know they've got a hole in the middle, so does a donut. But it's just not going anywhere. And that person who made the point about transportation is dead on the money. That's the problem, and this is not going to solve it.
Thanks for the call, Dick. And here's an email from a listener. I think Tony Slayman is on the right track. As long as the money comes from private investment, the landing looks great from the river, but it does look like the backside of a structure if you're standing on Laura Street, not friendly or approachable. Surely something could be done to change that without tearing the whole thing down. Right. Arnold in Penny Farms is with us. He's on the line. Arnold, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. I'd lived in the area since 72, and I remember all the grand hype for the first landing, as well as our illustrious football team. And so I have a moment of satire I'd like to exchange. Why don't we establish a funding authority for this yet another landing that would require that the retirement funds of the public officials who support it be used to help underwrite the cost of it? That, to me, would be a real test of how serious this thing would be. And I'll take your answer off the phone.
All right, Arnold. Thanks for that. Let's go to Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning. I remember when Mayor Jake Godbold was with Mr. Rouse initially, and they gave away all kinds of tax incentives and buybacks and all kind of taxpayer money to get this thing going. And within a year or two of it opening, it was already on the decline. I like what they did in Baltimore. If you remember, their landing is only dedicated to restaurants and bars. It's only a place to go for restaurants
right.
and bars, and they have like a little. I think they have like a little Alhambra performance space, but they tried the exact same thing when they first opened, and it didn't work. So I heard when they said public private, my ears started twitching. I mean, if Tony Slavin's a great guy. I know him personally. I wish him well. I think he needs something like that downtown, but I don't want to pay a cent for it again. And they never did say his main problem initially was the city promised to build him a parking garage of some kind or provide parking spaces, and I still don't see where that would be addressed. And looking at the drawings, I mean, you're going to need something times 10.
Right.
So where are you going to put the parking?
Yeah.
And
Thank you, Mark. That's been hanging out there for almost 20 years.
That parking garage fight has been, as you say, just hanging on forever. And the new garage under construction is supposed to help deal with that, but
Sure. And lots of calls on the big news out of the landing this week. But we do need to move on and discuss the other top stories of the week. Also making headlines, Sheriff John Rutherford this week is defending the voiding of traffic tickets that were issued to WJXT Channel 4 traffic anchor Ashley Mitchum. Full disclosure, Channel 4 is our news partner. Now, this all came out after the Times Union reported that the sheriff voided the citations after Mitchum personally called him on his cell phone. Officer Jose Marrero apparently stopped Mitchum three separate times and ticketed her for speeding, failure to change her address, and for having the FOP emblem on her car, which is apparently not kosher. We want to know, what's your reaction to this flap that the JSO is dealing with? Give us a call on this one at 549-2937. Cliff Davis, lots of coverage on this in the Times Union.
Yeah, lots of coverage. And, you know, it brings up the big question of, as a member of the media who covers cop stories from time to time, you know, is that right to use that direct line to the sheriff, you know, to try and get... You know,
The sheriff is saying he acted properly, that he was within his rights to void these tickets.
Right. But if that's the case, then he should put out his cell phone number to the entire community.
It's certainly a big talker because there are a lot of nuances to this story. Tim and Jeff, this reporter seemed to be hinting that this officer was almost stalking her, there's hints to that effect. It's a little murky as to what exactly happened.
To my mind, if there's enough evidence for him to void her tickets based on her phone call and allegations of harassment, then the cops should have an internal and fair investigation into this guy. If they don't, you know, then it's kind of, I have trouble buying the official story, to be quite frank.
You almost get the sense that she felt she was harassed, she calls the sheriff, and he basically just wants the entire thing to go away.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, though, that's not – there's a level of transparency, and there's a level of, if an officer is doing something incorrect,
right.
there should be more discipline than simply, you know.
Right.
And it was – I was interested to read, she was also cited with a misdemeanor notice to appear in court. She improperly had the FOP emblem on her car. Apparently, you can't do that.
We're looking into that. Andrew Pantazzi's actually spent yesterday looking into that law, and it's an old law. It's really murky, and it seems as though it's going to take some further litigation to actually get that cleared up. I think it was originated in 1949, and the law's been changed so many times, it's still kind of unclear whether it's illegal or not.
And why would someone have that on their car if they weren't a member?
It's supposed to be for direct family members.
Okay.
And at least according to the FOP, it's supposed to be immediate family members only, not for cousins and girlfriends and that kind of thing.
It does somewhat raise the question, again, not to be cynical, but why does that exist as a thing at all? I'm sure that nothing improper ever happens when someone with that emblem is speeding, that maybe they get different treatment or something. That doesn't happen, of course. But it raises the question that why is there an emblem that says this person is somehow different?
Let's go to your calls on this. If you've been following this story, what's your reaction to the news that a traffic anchor's tickets were voided by the JSO? 549-2937. Give us a call. Let's go to Richard in Riverside this morning. Hello, Richard. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I've been trying to personally call the sheriff's office the last few days to see if I could get some explanation as to the sheriff's reasoning, why he thinks this is a reasonable thing to do. Legal, I don't know. But reasonable, I haven't heard an explanation as to why he thinks this is okay. And frankly, I just got done paying a ticket for a bad headlight. And, you know, I thought it was unfortunate. I thought they could have given me an opportunity to fix it. But no, they ticketed me. I fixed it, and I paid my ticket like a good citizen. I want to know, you know, and frankly, I'm very angry that someone of prominence feels that they can escape their civic duty, and the sheriff backs that up. This is a fellow who's been spearheading the implementation of red light cameras to catch as many lawbreakers as he can. He is the face of the community in, you know, enforcing the law, and then he does something like this. I would like to hear him say why.
Thanks, Richard. And the sheriff's office, Cliff, they did issue a statement about this.
Right. Yeah, they did. But, you know, to me, it just there should have been official channels like any other citizen to go through. And I think that's most people's problem with this, is that if she would have went through like a normal citizen does and put in the paperwork and, you know, it would have gotten voided. I think that's, you know, perfectly understandable.
Sheriff Rutherford is being discussed as a potential mayoral candidate. Do you see this coming up at all in a campaign? No?
I think the entire situation is so odd, coupled with the idea that I think Rutherford's probably somewhat of a long shot right now to run. But, I mean, it's perfect fodder for a campaign commercial.
Yeah, and it's 549-2937. Ellen in Jacksonville's on the line. Hello, Ellen. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling about the emblem. I have an experience because I am an immediate family member.
Okay.
And we are treated differently, but it's not for what people think. I was pulled over, and I received the biggest talking to by a traffic officer of how people see that, and I was speeding. I deserved the ticket. And, you know, how people see that and would get the impression that I have a license to speed. And to be honest, his conversation, I asked him instead, I said, could you just give me the ticket, please? It was so harsh, and I deserved it. So we don't get a pass because of that emblem. And I took it off, and unfortunately, a couple of years later, I got a ticket, and I followed the process and took it to court, and I won. So the emblem is not a get out of ticket free card. That's all I want to say.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ellen, thank you for that. Thanks for calling in on that. Also making news this week, a high-powered coalition of major Florida employers, including some here in town, now say they support a law that would enact workplace protections for LGBT employees statewide. Florida Blue, the Haskell Company, and UNF are among the employers joining the group Equality Florida in this effort. They want to pass a bipartisan bill that would ban anti-gay and gender-based discrimination. Jeff Billman, whether it's likely to pass the Florida House and Senate, of course, is still very much an open question.
I don't think it'll pass. This has come up year after year after year, and legislators, usually Democrats, introduce this bill year after year after year, and it never really happens. And I think it's, quite frankly, it's kind of sad. And, you know, the modern economy is a very creative economy, and companies that are innovating and creating want to be able to draw from everywhere. And places that have these sorts of, you know, discriminatory practices in place and don't rectify them, Quite frankly, it scares off, I think, a lot of businesses that might otherwise relocate here.
Tim Gibbons, this is coming from a fairly conservative business coalition. We're talking CSX, UNF, Wells Fargo, Florida Blue, Haskell, and other businesses around the state. Disney.
Yeah, a third of the founding members of this group are businesses from
Jacksonville.
Which is I think, fascinating and surprising. But the argument they use is the exact same thing that Jeff just said, which is basically they're in a fight for employees, and if employees don't want to come here, that hurts them as businesses. It's interesting that, obviously, historically, this is something that Democrats have introduced, but this is a core of the Republican Party now supporting it. I'm kind of in agreement that it seems unlikely to pass, but it is interesting to see the changing blocks behind something like this that, eventually might play out.